speak to Minister Miskiewicz, acting DG and your team, Ms. Nola, our committee secretary, Mr. Abe, our content advisor, Ms. Inez, our researcher and our support staff, members of the media, and all those that are watching and listening to our portfolio committee today. Good morning. Our committee today will be dealing with the performance of the first quarter and the second quarter of 2020-2021. Remember, this we always do this, not focusing on a specific directorate or branch, but we will be doing it even next year when we'll be dealing with the third quarter and the fourth quarter. But we all know that on the first quarter, we had to go for a lockdown, something that was new to everyone, and almost everything came to a standstill in our country. So definitely, even the departments couldn't perform, especially your April, May, and June. In fact, we all know that the country was locked down at the time. There was no movement. There was nothing. We were not even going to work. We didn't even have such meetings as we're doing today virtually. We started the virtual meetings much later, but April and May, it was just a standstill in our country. We understand those challenges that faced everyone. But we're still standing. The department is still here. It means that we managed to travel through that. So we then expect DM to present to us. We also understand that because we saw the spending trends, we did ask you to present to us the performance 2 weeks earlier on. But what we're doing now is also part of how we monitor the performance of the department and the oversight. We can't say to you because we had asked your spending patterns, you cannot come and present to us the first and the second quarter. You have to do that. It's how we oversight and monitor the work of the department and the executive. Ms. Martin, is there any apologies that we have today?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to honourable members, as the DM, as well as our colleagues. The two apologies that we have from the portfolio committee side is one from the Honourable Van Skalkwyk, who's not feeling well, and the second one is from Honourable Van Staden, who's attending another committee meeting. From the department, it's the Minister's apology. She's attending Cabinet, and the Acting DG, who is also accompanying the Minister to that very meeting. So the DM is here to lead the delegation. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Lola. We wish our colleague, Honorable Van Skalkwyk, speedy recovery. We know that she is not well. She has not been feeling well the last few days, though she was participating in the meeting. But today she can't even participate in the meeting. So wishing you, our colleague, a speedy recovery. And our own Honorable Hicklin is fine now. She can see everything. But we were with her in her journey and felt the pain that she felt when she had to go to hospital time now and again. Ms. Martinez, the agenda will be dealing with these two quarters, and later on we'll be dealing with our own issues, the minutes and all. We'll release them, the department, after we had satisfied ourselves with our questions, comments, and all that. But now I'm handing over to you, DM, and your team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. A very good morning to the honorable members, to the team that supports the committee, and as well as the team from the department. Honorable Chairperson, I'm not going to be long. At least we already dealt with the first issues that the minister is attending to the cabinet, and the DG has had to be with her because we are presenting a memo to cabinet, which must be presented by the DG, acting DG. I have therefore with me in the team the acting DDG for the GRC branch, Mr. Lwazi Mahlangu. He will be leading the presentation together with Juanita, who is from the finance section, as well as Aaron. They all from finance. Given that we have the department as well as the PMTE. Mine is short, Chairperson. I think you've covered me quite well in indicating that we met the committee about 2 weeks or so ago, and we made some presentation on the performance of certain programs, both financially and performance-wise. And those programs, that presentation is not really that different, given that it was 2 weeks and we were talking about performance of the two quarters. And therefore, I think the committee is... will understand that they won't have to expect much from or a much difference from that 2 weeks ago. Safe to say that with our observation that especially the critical programs, which are the backbone of infrastructure, that is construction and facilities management. We've realized that those two programs are not performing at the optimal. And I hate to say that our observation went a little back, and we realized even in the last year's performance, the two programs have not performed well. And since our last meeting, therefore, we have decided to rope in ISA so that we go around the country and scope the amount of work that needs to be done in the projects that would have been started, and how we could speed up ensuring that those projects that were already ready for delivery, we find a way to speed them up so that we cover some ground, especially the lost ground in quarter one. That work is continuing as we speak in terms of engaging with ISA and visiting the various construction sites for scoping purposes. Within less than a month, we should be able to say what we shall be doing with each of the projects that are behind schedule. We've sought their expertise and advice in that respect. So, Chair, without wasting much of your time, appreciating the importance of ensuring that we follow procedures, it is my humble plea that if the meeting goes beyond 12, the team be released with myself at 12, as we will be doing the similar exercise on the NC on the annual report in the with the select committee in the NSOP. But for now, with your permission, Chair, I will hand over to Lwazi to lead the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Chairperson of the committee, members of the portfolio committee, DM, and colleagues from the department, good morning. Okay. So thank you for that. Chairperson, you've already gave the introductory remarks in the context of the lockdown in the first couple of quarters, as well as the second quarter. I think as the restrictions were being, as we are easing the restrictions and of slowly opening up the economy, and we see that there's a slow pace and uptake in the projects as well as some of the initiatives by the department. So the context in that way, as you alluded in your introductory, and also the context given by the chairperson. So I'll take you through the details of the program structure in the department, and also the level of performance overall, and then the other sections are now speaking to financials. If you can go straight to slide 4, next slide. So this is the context in which we are presenting the non-financial performance information, wherein if you look at quarter one performance, we had about 22 indicators that were set for the department, and 5 of them are achieved. And the 5 is based on the grid that we have at the bottom, where we consider the targets that have been achieved at a particular level performance, which is in this case 90% and above. And we also have performance that will be in the yellow zone, and that is 50% to 89%, which reflects the combination of outputs and activities in that context. And when you have performance in the amber, which is 11 to 49%, mainly around the activities, which we'll find in our operational. And then you have performance in the red, which is mainly input level, which is 0 to 10%. So if you look at that and you correlate that to the bigger the quarter one and quarter two, you'll see that our performance is in the activity level, basically at the level of 23% quarter one and level of 33% quarter two. And that basically is not a good performance, it's weak performance, and the representation of that will be in the detail in the next slide. The next slide is also a representation of the two, the general observation. One is the level of performance which I've represented here, and then the second also looks at the level of financial. So these two indicators basically sum up the entire programs of the department. Next slide. So as I contextualize this one, Chair, the context here is the manner in which we are reporting now is based on the structure that we presented to the committee when we're presenting the strat plan, the annual performance plan, and the APP as guided by the new framework for planning. So what you will see here is that where there are no quota targets, which I'm talking about the blocks that are highlighted in gray, what it means is that in terms of the APP, it is not a quota target in the APP. That represents the output level, tangible aspect. But it is represented as activity towards achieving the APP target that will be reflected in the fourth quarter. So what we've done, that will be represented in the operational plan. So what we've done is that we have highlighted to the committee that it is not a quota target as it appears as per the APP, but we are also reflecting what then is the operational target in the operational plan, and then what is the progress in terms of operational plan towards that APP target in the APP. So that's basically how we're representing it. So where it's blocked gray, it's all operational targets. Where it's not blocked with gray, is then the APP target. So it's a combination of that pyramid of that. Now, if I come back to program one, With a vacancy rate of 12% as an annual target, we have achieved 11% in quarter one and quarter two, owing again to the new way of doing things, which basically resulted in virtual planning and virtual interviews, adverts gone out, establishment of panels, and then interviews will take place virtually. So we're sitting at 92% achievement in terms of that target, quarter one, quarter two. So as we continue this process, it will be more of virtual as the new way of doing business. From the appointment of those, we also look at the disaggregation according to women and people with disabilities. We're sitting at 39.8% women against a target of 14 quarter one, and we're sitting at 38.72 in quarter two. And we are not doing very well in terms of people with disabilities, 1.32 and 1.34 in terms of people with disabilities against the target of two. And that also shows the slow progress in terms of our recruitment process, as well as the virtual processes, connectivity issues and stuff. But then that is something that is being worked into the department to speed up the process of filling the vacant positions within 4 months, as against the norm of filling within 6 months. And then what we're also doing in support of the government priority of a capable, ethical and developmental state, we also have indicators that then speak to how do we automate processes in the department. We're going the route of paperless work, paperless automation. So we've got indicators that then look at the extent to which the manual work or processes in the department, we then have to automate them. So we had 100%, which then represents at the end of the financial year two initiatives that we want to do, such as the leave application and logistics, such as your bus payments and stuff. So those are being automated. But in terms of the operational plan target, first of all, we needed to start with the business case, approve the business case. And what we have done is that the business case for leave application as well as logistics, which are ready for automation, has been done. Then the second approach, which is in quarter two, was then to look at the procurement strategy to advertise for the appointment of a service provider that would then assist in terms of that. So that has been done in terms of the business case and the procurement. We then followed the approach of CETA, which is basically the state IT agency in terms of panel, which is one way of trying to speed up the process. But I think there was low or insufficient market response from that, which then limited the service providers. And therefore, what we have then considered was to then go open market tender, where we then cast the net wide for a wider selection of service providers. And that's basically what we're looking at. But at the same time, looking at inward forecasting in terms of how then do we look at systems inward that can also assist and speed up the process. So this is where we are in terms of automation. The other one is then looking at digitization, that is looking at solutions for digitization, such as Honorable Chair and colleagues and members, you will also recall that we are managing immovable assets. We have talked about the asset register. So there's a new thinking or the new system out there called the blockchain, which is one of the complicated solutions that can be used for managing an immovable asset register. So it's one of the things that is being assessed. And again, operational, in terms of operational targets, that is at an activity level, the business case was signed and approved, and then we're in the procurement strategy to look at a discussion around the procurement of such solutions that can assist in or digitizing some of the work. And now the automation and digitization, they will work concurrently. But digitization is more on the entire value chain in changing the way we do things. Next slide. Now that then we have program two, intergovernmental coordination. Intergovernmental coordination, again, this then speaks to outcome that talks about integrated approach to government planning, and we are driving this through intergovernmental coordination. And at the time of planning, Chair, on this one, that is after the announcement last year by the President and SONA, when it Public Works was then given the added mandate of infrastructure and also the discussions around PICC the transition of PICC into Public Works. So we had initially planned that as PICC comes on board into the department, we'll then have to look at the previous work that they've done, such as when they were still in the Department of Economic Development as part of the Infrastructure Development Act. And one of the things that we're doing with the SIPs, the strategic integrated projects, and at the time we planned that as they come on board, we then accommodate them into the department's Stratland APP and also continue the work in terms of continuity, continue the work of that. But then as decisions as well as the environment change, then PICC then had to find a space in the infrastructure South Africa, and therefore this indicator will then be carried over by that PICC, not in the department as we initially thought would be part of the department. So in terms of infrastructure plans and reviews as part of the SIPs will be represented in that information as ESA and PICC then present. So in terms of the departments, they're not part of that. The second one is the sector performance review. As I indicated, that this is part of the integrated plan. So this is the National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure working together with our sister provincial departments of Public Works and Infrastructure, where we then look at a coherent and comprehensive plan of action that then delivers on infrastructure accommodation in terms of common areas between the two spheres of government, and extend it further as part of the district development model in terms of common areas of delivery by the three spheres of government. So what we have here is that we have to first review the structures, the governance structures, which will be endorsed by the technical MINMEC and MINMEC, that is the Minister and MEC's forum, where then we'll discuss those issues of common interest. So that was done in terms of the review of the structures. In this case, two structures were established. One is the structure on governance, policy and legislative, which will have work streams such as dealing with the EPWP work opportunities, dealing with the municipal debts, and also dealing with the issues that affect the audits around the sector. We'll also look at entities as well as our oversight models that will then give effects to improve coordination, planning and service delivery. So that cluster will then focus on that and we'll discuss with the relevant. The second cluster that was agreed upon was the operation cluster. This then talks on the operational side of it, such as the infrastructure, dealing with the GIAMA, dealing with the operation bring back in terms of the assets as well as movable assets. So this is then the core business that then we'll be dealing with it. And all the discussions and the approaches of the plans and the deliverables will then be discussed in this technical MINMEC as well as MINMEC. So in terms of progress, having done the cluster reviews and stuff, to date what we have concluded on is that we have done the assessment and analysis of the provincial APPs in line with the new framework. First, we look at the alignment. Second, we look at the sector outcomes that were agreed upon, and then look at whether we are moving in the same direction. That was done in line with the sector. And beyond that was to also develop a five-year sector plan on the deliverables of the sector beyond just individual APPs, but on issues that were discussed, that will look at that will include issues such as capacity within the sector, oversight, model interactions with other government other governments and also organs of state, as well as district development, SALGA, COOPTA, and also forge a way and a relationship in how we deliver that. So that five-year sector plan then seeks to deal with that, and then the review will take place in that context as we roll out this plan in 21-22. This is what we've done in terms of the sector. And then part of the sector is also to develop the DPW Skills Pipeline Intervention Program, and this basically is to focus on beefing and feeding into the built environment within the sector to then improve on skills. So as there's a database on professionals, on unemployed graduates, which then will then be looked into programs where they can be placed across the sector to then be filed. So it, on the one hand, is on the job training with an intention to then have fully fledged skills within the built environment. And this we correlate it with the future plan on infrastructure, such as the Infrastructure Act and Infrastructure 2045, where we say to feed into the future needs of infrastructure, what skills do we require now? And how to then harness that skill, nurture that skill, so that in the country we don't then, when it's time for implementation of infrastructure, we don't find ourselves having to talk about lack of capacity and skills, but we have already started a pipeline project that then feeds into the future plans in terms of infrastructure. To date, what have we done? Quarter one, 676 beneficiaries have participated in the skills pipeline program in the department through the capacity programs on the job training, issuing of bursaries in the built environment, and then in quarter two, we are sitting at 999. That represents about 72% at an operational level against the 1,395 target that we set annually. So which means that this is progressing very well. And we might even overshoot this statement because of the interest and the importance of this. Next slide. Then beyond just the national department taking the lead in the presentation, in the capacity building, we are also working again with provincial departments where now from a geographical point of view, we also make it easier to identify areas where they can also source this kind of capacity and participation of beneficiaries in the program. So again, this is also an approach of integrated planning and coordination where working together with provincial departments also form part of the skills pipeline strategy and the continuous monitoring of these deliverables within the sector. So we have issued letters to provinces informing them of their targets aligned to the MTSF, and then that also speaks also to the presidential stimulus package as part of contributing to employment, and also we continue to monitor the progress thereof at a sectoral point of view on how this works. Continue with the virtual meetings as part of monitoring implementation. Where there are challenges, we then intervene. So this is also contributing to the numbers that this will then work in terms of operations to then try to speed up and then improve the numbers that I've also spoken to in terms of the skills pipeline. Next slide. The next one then is program three, which is expanded public works, which has two indicators. One is work opportunities that are reported in the ERP system. And then from those numbers, then is the disaggregation of those in terms of women, youth, and people with disabilities as they are reflected into the system. Quarter one, we're sitting at 119,538 against 146,123. And then quarter two, we're sitting at 325 work opportunities created against 492. So this is cumulatively, we are sitting at that. And the challenge is basically that, again, linking it that to the earlier introductions by the chairperson and DM around the issue of lockdown, I think we had an experience where community project works were actually affected a great deal owing to the restrictions and lockdown, and therefore the numbers were not as great as we would have anticipated. And then that also affected in terms of the designated groups as well. The numbers were not as great. But suffice to say is that we still have a challenge in terms of the youth attracting programs that attract youth into those spaces or initiatives of government, as well as people with disabilities participating in that. So again, so those are some of the issues that we are facing. But as we are continuing to ease the restrictions, and now that we're on level one and going forward, we think that the numbers are slightly picking up. I think when we present quarter three, we'll see that there is an upward trend in this. Next slide. Next slide then speaks to program four of the department, property and construction, industry, policy and research, again, we are reflecting that in these two indicators, we've got the expropriation bill, which our intention was to introduce it to Parliament. And then the second indicator then speaks on the repeals, basically public general laws and repeals bill, particularly focusing on redundant acts or acts that may not be as effective or may be contrary to the development, focusing on all those. So those are the two that we have. In terms of the expropriation bill, I think we're happy to report that it has been introduced in Parliament, endorsed by a cabinet, and is sitting in Parliament. And going forward, will be then guided and directed by the portfolio committee in terms of their program and the participation of what you will call your public participation, and will continue to provide technical support in terms of that. So what we're basically saying is that in terms of expropriation bill, the initial target was quarter four. As of quarter two, we have already reached 100%, and this is one target that has been achieved well before its time. Same with the general laws. In terms of operation, we have done consultation and quite a great deal with South African Law Reform Commission and the Department of Justice. Consultations will still take place in terms of certain bills. There was a report that was done in 2012 that talks of some of the acts. And now it shows that the 2012 is a long time. When you look at 2020, it's a long time. So there's still discussions on the review of that document, which was basically the Law Reform Commission report. That document is being assessed and addressing the changing environment, and then also the laws that needed to be repealed or amended in the context of this indicator. Next slide. The next program is Program 5, which is our prestige portfolio, which deals with the prestige portfolio. We have two indicators that deals with the policies. The two policies is basically one state event policies, and the second one is accommodation policy, particularly for members of parliament in the parliamentary villages. We are happy to report that the policy we've conducted research and engaged stakeholders. Policies have been concluded, state events has been concluded, and then which then represents the views of the department and has been concluded. In terms of the accommodation policy, there's still more engagement and input from stakeholders are being considered. We have the departmental view. The minister has also looked at her own views, and then now we're considering the views of the stakeholders into that and then present it before Parliament in terms of the accommodation policy. Planned state events, again, these were events, I think, again, the restrictions on the lockdown. On planned events, they did not take place because of the restrictions. However, unplanned events, we had three funerals that took place, and she was reporting basically unplanned, no planned events that took place owing to lockdown. Next slide is continuation of prestige. Percentage movable asset requested within 60 days. Now here, Chair, the idea was basically to procure movable assets for the prestige portfolio. So here what we've done is that we've done away with the idea of procurement, and therefore we are looking at movable assets that are in the storeroom, that if a client needs an asset, we then take them to the storeroom, select that item, or we look at unused furniture in unoccupied houses. I think that's another way of saving rather than continue to purchase whereas there is stock in the storeroom. So that is the decision and also the approach moving forward. In terms of this wait list in Parliament, particularly in the context of managing parliamentary assets as well as providing support to Parliament, we have identified the costing as well as the work to be done. That is now with the submission to the DG. DG has endorsed the submission. At the time of reporting quarter two, it was a submission, but to date, it has been signed off and then will be then presented to Parliament for endorsement on the wait list of the work that needs to be done in Parliament. Next slide. Next slide is basically program one of PMTE, which is program six in terms of our APP. This one represents the performance that will be presented in the financials. I won't go into detail into that. Next slide. The finance will then present the changes there. Program 7, Real Estate Investment Services. Again, here we're talking about the release of land for socioeconomic objectives as well as the CM, which is our custodian asset management policy. Plans, custodian asset management plan. What we've done in terms of the release of hectares, an annual target of 34,995 hectares to be released. We've released 48.3 hectares conducted for disposal and requests has been received to dispose of such of the hectares. And we also are looking at Treasury endorsing and also assisting us in giving guidance on the additional 323 hectares to be released. So we're working with Treasury on the disposal of some of these for socioeconomic in terms of the initiatives of government. Partly coordination, intergovernmental, as well as release of land for other departments to then carry on their mandate and discharge their mandate in assisting the objectives, the government's greater, broader objectives. CM is the regulated according to KIAMA. It's normally presented in the second quarter as National Treasury, which is a composition of all the UMs, user asset management plans. That was reached, the target was reached and submitted to Treasury. And that then details all the projects that will then have to assist the user departments. Next slide. And then construction, I think the DM gave context to construction, where now we had a challenge in terms of construction, and you would actually see it in quarter one where not major, there were no major, there was no performance within in that context in quarter one. And there were a number of issues there. And partly to this is the external forces in the context of the construction sector being in the slump since 2009 and the challenges thereof, and also the slow uptake or the slow growth in the construction sector. But we're seeing slow pace as we're easing the restrictions in the quarter two, where we're sitting at 7 projects completed within a agreed period. This is measuring the efficiency approach, efficiencies within the construction, as well as the second one, which is also measuring the projects completed within a agreed project. So this is looking at projects within time, projects within quality, and projects within the agreed budget as a way of ensuring that we stick to the budget and the time frames of those projects. However, again, the context of lockdown affected that. Next slide. I think that's generally for all projects. Then this one measured the quantum of all the projects that we have, including those that were in the later stages for completion from the previous years. We're sitting at 12 over against 57. And then in terms of size handed over for construction, we're sitting at end of quarter two, 11 against 64. And then I think these are some of the issues. I think also the DM raised the issue that an enhancing capacity and infrastructure is also through the ESA, and how we can then speed up some of these as the mitigating strategies of improving performance. Next slide. And then, okay, that's number of projects completed, 12 of 66. I think I've touched on that one. Next slide. Next slide is our leasing portfolio, basically the real estate management services. We've got a number of indicators here. Number of private leases reduced within the security cluster. And the intention basically is to club for security purposes, is to club some of them into state-owned properties rather than private leasing and for security reasons. So we had identified 13 for the year to move 13 for the year from private leasing into state-owned. operationally, we first had to identify which are those leases, do a mapping of those leases, and then we issue procurement instructions in order for them to then migrate into those into the identified state-owned property. So we identified 10 leases from SAPS, which is part of the security cluster, and then we have already issued 2 procurement instructions so that we can start moving the migration process. I think one of the issues that we have is one of the buildings where we have identified the movement. There's still challenges in terms of the readiness of the buildings, delays encountered in the project as a result of work stoppages, local business forum demanding work packages and packages that are above market rates. So that also, the negotiations and the work stoppages then tends to also delay the migration process as well as movement into that. However, the project is on track now as we speak. Practical completion and the movement and the migration is expected to be completed in February 2021 as we continuously engage local business forum and understanding and also participating towards realizing this target. We also, from the leasing portfolio, need to identify savings. 20 leases were identified in quarter one. We convene negotiations so that we can negotiate reasonable rates so that, and then we are able to identify the savings that we realize from the renegotiations of those leases. Now, negotiations are taking longer because of the disagreements with the landlords where there's a certain market rate or treasury regulations, and then they are taking longer because there are high demands or demands higher than the agreed rates, and therefore trying to as much as possible to engage with the landlords and clients on a reasonable rate so that we can then conclude on the leases with the landlords. And those negotiations are continuous. Now, we've also developed an empowerment policy within the property as well as the leasing strategy on how we can engage further with all the relevant stakeholders in understanding the context which we are operating economically, socially, as well as the transformation agenda and how we can then speed up the process of leases. Percentage change in revenue generating through letting of our state-owned, this is excluding the harbors, so this is purely on office accommodation. It's basically we have 3.68 at quarter one, which amounts to 523,464, and 8.6 million in quarter two, a change of 4.7%. Cumulatively, we are sitting at 9.1 revenue generated through letting. So as more state-owned properties are let out through that letting strategy as well, we are expecting this revenue to increase. Next slide. And then in terms of unutilized vacant state-owned properties let out, we had identified vacant surplus land, and that is also identifying from the asset register about 1,190 vacant surplus state-owned properties have been identified. We are very slow in this one. Basically, we've only done about So the last progress, in other words, is actually greater than what we had initially identified, just 70. So we've identified 1190, of which the 70 is part of the 1190. Quarter two is sitting at 34 vacant land property, vacant state-owned properties against the target of 35. And then also, again, part of the letting strategy that is to speed up this process and looking at increasing the number of unutilized vacant state-owned for letting out. In terms of our transformation agenda on new leases awarded to black-owned, we are looking at 25%. And what we have done now is that we are of the total number of leases that have been awarded, the 7 leases that were awarded, 5 of them are to black-owned. I think that is where we are starting to realize that strategy, the leasing strategy and contribution to the transformation agenda, that then represents about 71% of leases that are. And again, as we continue to let out an identification of those potential leases to black-owned, we are expecting this number to increase and improve our transformation agenda. Next slide. And then in terms of new leases procured within the maintenance plan, we had identified three. So this is the combination of using the number three leases, and the 100% is representing the processes that we need to follow in terms of ensuring that we have a lease, we have signed a lease agreement, and ensuring that it comes with the maintenance plan. So this is basically what we are looking at. 100% in terms of processes to ensure that the quantum, that is the number three, has all the necessary processes in place. And unfortunately, again, owing to the lockdown, first quarter, but particularly first quarter, there was no sitting in terms of the National Bid Adjudication Committee. L, particularly for leases, did not sit, and therefore we could not achieve. And then in quarter two, we're looking at five again, but in this case, four or five is 80%. Leases have been procured, and also the processes followed through in terms of ensuring that those leases, they come with the procurement, with the maintenance plan. And then some of the bids are still in the adjudication to ensure validity. And one of the things is that in terms of the National Treasury database, the client landlords are required to update their information annually. So the validity issues and also that affects is that you will find that even on the database, some of them do not update annually their information, and therefore will have some compliance issues. And therefore, we've also engaged Treasury in that context that encouraged them to update annually onto the system, so that at least they do not fall into the non-compliance aspect, and then eventually affect the negotiations and the negotiations and concluding of these agreements. In terms of business opportunities, what we do, these last two indicators speak to the harbors and coastal and nodal areas. So basically here we're talking about us providing in areas in the harbors and coastal areas, providing business opportunities. And here you're looking at an opportunity where you find that some of the assets in the harbors or coastal areas, we may have different businesses that then use those facilities to run businesses. So we then need to expand and increase the number of opportunities with the multiplier effect of one business with the potential of employing a number of or creating a number of jobs. So that's the multiplier effect of jobs that we're looking at. So we're sitting at 7 against 3 in quarter one, and then we saw the slow pace in quarter two because of the contractual of businesses. So sometimes you find that if the contract then is extended or the contract is longer, and therefore there's a slow uptake in terms of the extension in the other quarters. But we're expecting this to increase with a significant impact on the creation of actual jobs by the businesses that will be occupying some of the assets or facilities or buildings that are custodian of public works. And then from those, again, we also then have to then look at the rentals that we have. So we are looking at an increase in the rentals. One is the business opportunity, which actual jobs, but at the same time, increase the rentals, which will also contribute into the fiscal and government-wide, as well as also speaking to those assets, also coming up with a portion of an amount that will also maintaining those buildings themselves. So we have seven in Port Nolloth, as well as one in Port Nolloth. All these have not yet been signed, but pending finalization of the agreements with the tenants so that we can then agree on the rentals as well as then taking and then conclude the leases and then start realizing those rentals. Next slide. I think two more slides to conclude. Real estate, that is our asset register, and real estate information registry services. We also part of the intergovernmental coordination, which is basically our coordinated approach, working with our sister departments towards a single repository of asset register. We have done about, we also have an indicator that looks at provincially movable asset register assets for compliance. Obviously, we do 9 every year and continuous back. Wait, where work. So we have basically have two in each quarter with three in the last quarter that then give us the nine provinces. Two were done in the first quarter, two were also done in assess for compliance in the second quarter. We'll achieve that target. And then we also do physical verification to validate existence and assess condition of those assets. We've done about 1,183 in the first quarter against the 7,390. Again, also the issues of lockdown in terms of physically verifying going into that, so restrictions around that. But we're seeing this low, we're seeing a slight peak in quarter two at 2,124 against the 1,848. And I think as time goes on, we're going to see a slight peak as well in quarter three and quarter four towards achieving that annual target, or at least cover up for some of the lost time in the first quarter, but with a significant verification of assets to validate existence and condition. And this also will link to the next slide, which basically talks on the facilities management as well. I'll touch on it. Vesting, number of land parcels vested to confirm ownership. We did 23 applicants were received and reviewed. And then 54 were vested and 153 are in the process in the quarter two. Again, same similar approach in terms of the challenges of lockdown. So I'm not going to go into detail on that, but we're seeing slow pace and uptake on this or a slight peak in terms of that. In the next slide, on the facilities management, we also have an indicator where we assess conditions. This is the same one I was talking about. Is that here we are assessing the conditions of building that we have identified 200 for the year, 50 for the quarter, one was done, quarter one again, and then 20 were done in quarter two to assess conditions. I think this is more in terms of capacity that we require in terms of this, because this is a technical area and technical area that needs it to that. Now link this to the idea of skills pipeline that I presented earlier on, as well as identifying skills. So there's a process in place of identifying the necessary skills to assist and spread across the regional offices, where we basically enhance and improve the capacity to continue to carry out this. And this is basically what we have in that. And then also process-wise is to improve the approach, and also we provided templates on how this can be done and then assess conditions. And that's also linked to the first one, that in those buildings that we have assessed, there are various components that will be assessed, such as leaf spoilers, generators, etc. So those will also be assessed in terms of critical functioning of those components to ensure that the building is functional. Next slide. So this is the last slide. And then above that, last slide. Oh, then there's critical components. Yes, this same as critical components I touched on. That. Now, this is a slide that then talks to the journey of the SIFs. As I highlighted in terms of the SIFs and the PICC work. So this is an overview of the active projects in the program, those that are in the procurement, feasibility studies, projects, and projects. So that's basically the general. So there's about a total of 81 projects. With a total portfolio value of 800 billion, and then broken down in terms of the various stages at which these projects are at in the department. So that concludes the ninth financial, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. And I think through you, Chair, the next slides will talk on the financials, main board, public works, CPWI, as well as PMT. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, DM. Thank you, Razi, for a detailed presentation on the first and second quarter performance. I'm now inviting honorable members for comments, questions, now it's Honorable Graham Murray, Honorable Siwisa, Honorable Trink, Honorable Hicklin, in that order, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. Yeah, not too much. I think we've seen quite a bit of this already recently, so I don't think any of this is really, really new. I think we obviously had to prepare ourselves for the fact that this was, that COVID was going to have an impact, and I think given that we're still doing relatively okay with respect to the meeting of targets and that. There were just a couple of things that I wanted to ask. The $234 million that was spent on behalf of the Department of Health on cleaning and sanitizing of quarantine sites and PPE, my understanding was that DPWI was going to cover the costs of the EPWP participants and not necessarily of the actual product use. So if we could just get clarity on that. And then with respect to the IDT, I keep asking this question and nobody's answering it, so I'm gonna keep answering it and asking it until I do get an answer. We were presented right at the outset of the announcement that the IDT was going to be closed. We were told that the IDT was going to be given four tranches of 21 million rand from the department, so it would be a total of 84 million over 4 months. Now, I haven't seen any evidence of that money, but there has been other money that's referenced here that's been paid over to the IDT. So, and it's I think it's right in the region of 76 million rand. So what happened to the 84 million? Is the 76 part of that 84 million? Have they just decided to deal with it differently? What is the plan around IDT? Because at this stage of the game, the IDT has been hamstrung. They are not allowed to be used as implementing agents by the department. They're not allowed to obviously take on new clients because they've been told they're closing down. But they are running costs that have got to be covered, and they're not in a position to generate their own income. Is something being done with respect to them pulling in their own funds? And I understand we're not discussing IDT, but it has a bearing on the expenditure of this department. So far, certain allocation has come out of the, and it seems to me it's come out of Program 4, which is the policy development, which is also a huge issue because that's an area that we really have a problem in. And that money is now being allocated to IDT. Is it sufficient to keep on supporting IDT right through this financial year? If not, what are we going to do with respect to that? Because there are proper running costs. And then obviously I see that with the EPWP, the non-state sector NPO program, that's being funded out of a different section. The other thing that's concerning is that the non-state sector NPO program is only starting now. It should have started in April, but it's only commencing now because of various issues. The money that was unspent, in other words, what should have been spent up until now, has now been reallocated with respect to the bailout of SAA, if I'm not wrong. If you could just confirm that, because obviously that could have been money allocated to IDT for running costs or whatever. So I'm just concerned that we've very happily handed out money that hasn't been spent for the SAA bailout, but we might not have money to keep on supporting IDT. And IDT have actually been put in the position by the minister of not being able to be an operational entity. So I think that's my biggest concern is what burden is being placed on this department. The one other thing that I did want to speak on is that the deputy minister raised is obviously the delay in the projects, the construction side of things. There are two issues that are very concerning around construction management. The one is the construction mafia, and the other one is the SMMEs. So the construction mafia is one thing. They come in, they demand 30%, they're not even prepared to do work for it, and they shut down sites. It's a real issue. Even President Ramaphosa alluded to it in one of his speeches. I'm not sure if it was in a State of the Nation address or in a general speech. But the construction mafia is a very real issue, and I'd like to know whether or not the department is actually taking this seriously enough to have some sort of policy around it, and whether they're looking at ways of addressing it. And I think it's going to get worse because people are desperate. There's no money out there. Projects are running behind. People have not been earning money. So I think that's going to be an issue. The other one is the SMME issue. I raised this with CIDB last year when we had oversight and we messed with them. And I've asked questions around it as well to the minister. With the SMMEs, one of the biggest problems we have, and I know CIDB's got a training program in place and a capacitation program, but what happens is a labor only comes in and they say, right, we will build, we've got bricklayers, we will build this section of the project, this is our allocated portion, and then the agreement is that they get paid per brick that gets laid. In order for them to meet their costs, in other words, pay their bricklayers, take their cut, and cover general costs, there's a certain number of bricks that need to be laid in a day and in a week. And what happens is that they're not meeting those targets. So it comes to the end of their two-week period, they then they measure up, the QS signs off on it, and they get paid less than what they had anticipated. Because in their heads, they're getting a certain amount a day. That then causes huge problems, and the companies are then being held to ransom, and they're being forced to pay additional costs because suddenly the guys can't pay their labor, and their labor then go on strike. So this is another area that causes a huge problem on construction sites, and I honestly believe it's not being adequately addressed by the department or the CIDB or whoever. And I do believe that the SMMEs are a massive problem because they don't understand business concepts. They understand how to build, but they don't understand how to run a business. And I think that's something we have to look at going forward, because I think it's going to get worse as the pie gets smaller or as the demand gets greater because people have got no money. I think we're going to have a huge problem with SMMEs. And then my final thing is, how are we going to be reporting on infrastructure going forward? So now we've got this whole new infrastructure, we've got these SIPS programs, we've got the PICC. Are we creating a new program that will just focus on infrastructure, or is it going to be split across a number of programs within the department? I mean, for me, it would make more sense, and it would be a lot easier for us to do oversight if infrastructure is allocated its own program and everything related to ESA is then under one program. But at this stage, I'd just like to know how the department foresees the management of the infrastructure side of things and the reporting on that and the budgeting going forward. I think that's me for now. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. Before I go, I do apologize. There were just two other things. The one is, you mentioned the Public Works General Laws Repeal Bill on slide one. What does that relate to? I'm not sure that we don't have a public works law. So if you could just explain what that is related to, and then the accommodation policy that's being considered, are there time frames with respect to that? And will it be done before the new financial year so that allocations of budget can then be done in line with the accommodation policy? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. Can I proceed?
Yes.
Okay. I have a few comments and a few questions that I need to ask. Coming to the leasing of buildings and renting of buildings, I have a serious problem about that, Chairperson and DM. Because we are renting buildings, whereas we do have buildings that we can utilize, that you guys can utilize as a department. So why are you not utilizing those buildings? Because according to your report, there are buildings that have been verified that they are there. And I don't know what is the condition of those buildings. Maybe we can be told what is the condition of those buildings that you've already verified yourself. And then there are projects that you are talking about. Who's responsible for those projects while we know that IDT is not active anymore? And then I think the other part of the question was asked by Honorable Graham. And then the Law Commission report, according to your presentation, is that it started in 2012 and it still has not been finalized. Why is that the reason for that? We are giving, the department is giving out bursaries, and I've asked in the previous meetings that what are we doing about those beneficiaries that are getting those bursaries? Are they actually absorbed into the system, or what happened? They get bursaries and then they have to go out and fend for themselves out there. And then the digitization that was presented today, is this actually linked to the regional officers? Because I don't know what is the job of the regional officers. If national has to go out and do oversight visits and everything. And another thing, Chairperson, this thing of sitting meetings virtually and then we are given a report that everything is on track and the department doesn't actually go and see if things are on track. Later on, we are going to find ourselves that we are going to deal with something that is not there. And then, how many vacant buildings does the DPWP have and why are they not using them? And I go to the last slide that was presented whereby it said that 800 billion for 81 projects. Is the department saying that each project is more or less than 800 billion? What kind of a project are these that are almost costing less than 100 billion? Because it's 81 projects, 800 billion. So if it was 80, it was going to be 100 billion per project. But now it's 81, which means it's more or less around 98, if my mathematics is correct. What kind of projects are these? And already there are projects that are running. I don't know if, maybe I didn't check my emails, Chair, but at some point I was asking where are the projects, what is happening with the projects. We also want to go and see if those projects actually exist, because with the AG's report last week, we heard a report whereby money was paid for a project that was never even started. So where are these projects? We want to go ourselves, not necessarily as a committee, but us, we have a responsibility to go out there and see if the project is actually running. And how far, what is the department going to do to deal with those landlords that escalate prices of rentals? What intervention are they going to do? Because it's either with the department goes out and maintain the buildings that are vacant so that they can be utilized basis the departments, because it's a once off payment, unlike to be paying rental to somebody else who's going to escalate prices. So what is the department doing to ensure that actually we move away from renting buildings, whereas we do have buildings, because we've spent so much money with the Zondo Commission, whereby an intervention had to be done by the EFF to say that is there no other building that can be utilized, only to find that there are vacant buildings that can be utilized. But we leave the vacant buildings and then we go and rent buildings, or we lease out our buildings to private companies and then we rent. We are working at a loss here. That is why landlords are going to take advantage, because it seems as if we don't know, the department doesn't know what they are doing in all of this. I think, Chair, for now, I'll end there. Maybe something will come up after the responses. Thank you.
Honorable Katrine.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just a few questions from my side. The first one on slide 14. Slide 14 speaks about the financial performance at 23%, or the percentage of financial performance 23% in quarter one, and 47% in quarter two. The presenter also said that he's not going to go into it in much detail. But Chair, I think very clearly, financial performance is actually crucial. Financial performance in terms of the crisis that we are in is important. So that poor performance financially, what were the causes for those poor performances? And I understand that we had the lockdown and so on, and we had people possibly who were not being able to properly do what they were asked to do, but Chair, I think that we all had to buckle down and work hard, even
in the midst of the lockdown. So if you could just unpack why we actually had this poor performance in terms of the on slide 14, the percentage financial performance. And then secondly, on slide 15 shows the release of some 34,995 hectares, which was for, that's the target for infrastructure and social economic objectives. But only 327, over 327 hectares were for investment analysis. And then it again indicates, and here's the question, with regards to that total number, Treasury requested to endorse, and I'm going to read the figures because maybe it's an error, but it's got 323,5790. Now, if you play around with that, that could be some 3,235,790 hectares. So I think that either it's an error, or you know, we have more property that we're looking to release than what has been indicated. But clearly, Chair, I think also with the amount of property that we have, I certainly do not feel that we're actually taking advantage of the property, which leads into my next slide 19, speaks about the letting of state-owned properties not utilizing. And I believe that in the letting of state-owned properties, we are not utilizing the advantage that we actually have. So we have a comparative advantage with regards to state-owned properties, where we can actually have win-win situations. If we let out our commercially viable property, as well as utilizing state-owned property rather than renting. And then just in line with that, we visited the Telkom Towers sometime last year. What is the position? He has a huge property. I think it was supposed to be used by SEPs. And I can't recall what was the target date for the completion of the renovations of the Telkom Towers. But what is the update on that? And then I think finally, Chair, what is the date, if any, for the completion of our immovable asset register, noting the use of digitization and blockchain technology? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable, I think it's mm-hmm. Honorable Hickley. Then after Honorable Signature for Honorable Jobo.
It is indeed. Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Thank you for the presentation. I'd like to just echo what Honorable Graham Marie said about the construction mafia. Any of us who either have worked at local government level or who are still exposed to people who are working at local government level know to what extent this construction mafia is really ruling the roost. And somewhere along the line, something needs to be done about it. And that must come from a legal framework that is proposed potentially by this committee and brought into law so that it can be handed down to provincial and local level, just my humble opinion. As you all know, one of my hobby horses is the immovable asset register. And in the presentation, programs 1, 2 and 8 are all severely dependent on having a proper immovable asset register. Physical verification of land has to be able to be done. And I understand that there were constraints in terms of COVID, but we have to do something about it. And the question about digitizing and making sure that everything is computerized so that we know where we stand, the question that I ask is it a tamper-proof system? By tamper-proof, in terms of procurement, in terms of leasing, in terms of collecting of money, what kind of assurance do we have that once we have this digitized list, that the appropriate billing can be done and the appropriate collections can be done without any loopholes so that money can disappear from the coffers? And that is very, very, very problematic for me, because the IAR, as we all know, is as useful as an ashtray on a motorbike at the moment, because it doesn't offer us any safety net and any tangible things that we can actually offset and we can actually match against. Again, in terms of Program 8, where it looks at construction and it looks at the various buildings, relating to the leases, this digitization and this assessment of the leases, will it ensure that this month-to-month lease nonsense can once and for all be put to bed? Because we are paying out far too much money because we are leasing on a month-to-month basis. And also relating to this month-to-month and this lack of a comprehensive database, is all the money that is actually owing to the department being able to be collected? And are there tenants in buildings owned by the DPWI who actually are not being billed? Because that's happening all over the place. And then we suddenly have this asset that could be pouring money into our coffers that is very, very much needed to be used in different projects, just not being collected at all. It just reinforces the need perpetually, all the way down the line from national to provincial and to local, the need for a comprehensive, finalized, immovable asset register. I leave it there. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hicklin. Honourable Njoba.
Thank you, Chairman. On my side, I'm partly covered by Honourable Trink, especially on the issue of telecom towers, that the issue of renting is not right at all. I understand, Chairperson, that the first quarter performance because of COVID-19, but the second quarter, I think the department must operation Pakisa. I think the department must do that, because when you look at capital infrastructure, we are still on 24%. Underperforming and underspending. So I think the department must do better, because the source of employment is infrastructure. So I think, thanks, Chair.
Honorable Njoba, are you true or you were cut?
I'm done, Madam Chairman.
Oh, okay, okay. Thank you, Honorable Kopane.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, mine is still a very simple question. If you read our, according to the presentation, both quarter one and quarter two, it is obvious that there's a lot of underspending in different under different programs due to the non-filling of the vacant positions. Now, my question is, what is the impact on service delivery due to this the non-filling of the vacant positions? And the second one, Chair, it is obvious that about 234 million was spent on behalf of the Department of Health on the cleaning and sanitation of the quarantine isolation site through the EPWP and then non-state sector, as well as purchasing the personal protective equipment. Now, my question is, what impact do this have on the work of the department? Because definitely the department have taken money and spend it on behalf of the Department of Health, if they can explain to us. Chair, the other question that I also, though my colleague Samantha also talk about it very well, Program 4, the money that is being used for IDT, that was unbudgeted for. I wanted to find out what impact did this over expenditure under Program 4, how did it affect it, particularly the program 4? Because Program 4 has a mandate of certain things that were supposed to be done. That's what I would like to know. Thank you, Chen.
Thank you, Honorable Kopane. DM and Loisy, can you deal with the comments and the questions that have been raised by the honourable members?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Let me once again indicate that almost all DDGs of the respective programs are here. Mr. Mchisa will deal with HR and related questions. CJ will deal with EPWP related programs, questions. So all of them, they are on the system. Luazi, you will lead in directing who deals with which questions. I will come last to try and clean up whatever would be left. Mr. Masangu?
Thank you, DM, and thank you, members of committee, honorable, for the questions. I think in terms of leases, Mr. Mabinja or Solimwan to address the issues of leases. Mr. Mkhotu on the construction project management, policy questions, Ms. Rabada, and then on the vacant state land asset register, Ms. Safa Suban, Mr. Mazibugo and Ms. Prinsloo on the financials underspending, and Mr. Mtomben assisted by Mr. Rabada on the entities, particularly questions around IDT and spending on that. I think we can start there, and then I'll also touch a bit on the SIPs question that was raised on the SIPs. Thank you, Chair.
DDGs?
Okay, they're still warming up, DM. Maybe let me start. Honorable Chair and the honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank the members once again for the question that begins to probe very deeply the kind of things that we're doing or not doing. The two areas I wanted to focus on, it relates to digitalization. Questions that arose out of that, while we may have used the word digitalization, the key issue around that is in essence what you all know, honorable members, which is the effort by the department to have an ERP system in place. It's more about the system that we're putting into place and seeking to conclude, the Akibas and the SAGE. It relates to that. Insofar as the business management information systems is concerned on the one level. And on the other level, yes, there's automation in some of the business areas, which it is not as hectic as the introduction of the ERP system itself. Those relate to the automation of the leave and logistic functions within the department. insofar as that is concerned, there is progress for us to begin to automate our system insofar as that is concerned. I think the area that still has a bit of challenges, as we've reported even in the previous sitting, it relates to the finalization of the ERP system with the immovable asset register being priority. Now, the report that we gave in the previous meeting, we indicated that we would begin to seek to source a service provider that will conclude the remaining modules, including the movable asset register. But that process has not been that successful because we have not had very good responses from the market, because we only had two companies that responded from within the list of companies on the CITA list. And therefore, the effort now is to move out on an open tender. And that is the process that we're currently involved with. Once that process has been finalized, we'll then be able to prioritize the immovable asset register, because most of the work in respect of finalizing the module on immovable asset register has been done. In fact, we're almost at 99%. It's very little that else that we need to do to complete it. Because currently, as we speak, the immovable asset register is already live on Akibas as we speak. It's no longer on Excel spreadsheet and all over the place. And the backup system of the legal system that also has data that has been kept there, the PMIS system, management is currently engaging in beginning to close that system so that we completely rely on data on Akibas and Sage. Is it able to be tempered with ease and interfered with? No, it is not. Currently, as we speak now, most of the payments are done through Sage as we speak. The list-in module is completely done on Akibas and payment done through Sage in respect of that. So that is why it's important for us to conclude that this project and completely automate our systems and our business processes, so that we can then be able to move completely away from the manual system insofar as that is concerned. The impact of non-filling of vacancies, we've also given a report on this in previous sitting, including last week, that there definitely would be an impact on that. And that is why immediately when lockdown 5 moved to lockdown 4, the ESCO within the department then begin to push for us to finalize a recruitment plan in that regard, and which was adopted in June, July. And as we speak now, there is tremendous drive for the recruitment to be concluded, at least within this financial year. Just yesterday, we sat the whole day from the morning until early evening doing interviews for two regions that has well not been having managers for the past year or so. That is the Cape Town region and the Mthatha region. And we've concluded those interviews yesterday. And we will have incumbents, which will hopefully be processed within the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then we can have those managers starting in those regions. Thank you, Chair.
We're still waiting for others to respond.
Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Chair CJ Abrams. With regard to the EPWP, good morning, members of the committee and colleagues. In terms of the EPWP, the work done through during the COVID-related interventions was not related to the quarantine sites. However, it was indeed on the public health hygiene strategy, and that would mean that we would be cleaning and undertaking various activities at the various public health facilities and hotspots as identified by and guided by the Department of Health. In terms of the normal NPO program, Honourable Graham is correct that the program is commencing shortly, and the budget for that is 344 million that we would be looking at. And in terms of during the medium-term budget process, yes, 200 million was released in terms of the request that had been required and received from the National Treasury given the state of the finances within the country. In terms of the impact of the program, in terms of the NPO program, that program related to the COVID-19 initiative was in terms of 245 million, and in terms of the number of work opportunities created as at our end of September and as formal data released by the department is 27,077 against a target of 25,000. Within the third quarter, additional work opportunities were created, and that number, we are still waiting for a finalization, which will be finalized once all payments have been made and data has been reported, will be in excess of 32,000 work opportunities created. The other benefits of the program is that more than 90% of the participants participating in the program were youth, in terms of this particular initiative. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CJ. Any other response?
We have Ms. Suban, Mr. Mchombeni, Ms. Rabada, and in that order, please.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues. Let me start with the immovable asset register in terms of the physical verification of land. Now, the exercise that is currently being done is an update. We have done physical verification, we do periodic physical verification. And the last exercise that was completed was in around 2014-2015. So this update that is scheduled, we are currently, as indicated, because of COVID, we're not achieving the targets that we set out, but we will intensify over quarter three and four. We hope to make up the numbers. In terms of the vacant state buildings, now we've quantified the vacant state buildings to be in around 1,168 vacant buildings. Now, a lot of these vacant buildings are in bad condition. They don't meet the occupational safety standards. So therefore, it's difficult to let them out and if it's required to be utilized for office purposes, etc. In most instances, when we offer them to the users, it's not suitable in terms of their requirements, but they most of the time it's office requirements, and it doesn't suit the office environment, and that would require rezoning, etc. But they do get offered to the users as part of the process. So what we're doing now is that we've got a program where we're going to then go to the market to basically sell off these buildings, et cetera. So the valuation process is currently on the go, and we're doing it in a phased approach as part of the strategy for revenue generation for unutilized buildings. The other question is in around the release of land. Indeed, we targeted in around 34,995 hectares. Now here, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the dependency is with mainly with rural development and human settlement. Now with rural development, especially most of these land parcels are identified for restitution claims. But we await the supporting documentation and the legalization process that the CLCs and the Minister of Rural Development will have to undertake before she signs off, and then that process then is coming through to us, and we undertake further investigations, etc., and get the sign off from the minister, and then and process that through to rural development. So the majority of these land parcels is for restitution claims, but we're working with the rural development to fast track some of the outstanding documentation, etc., that requires us to fast track that particular program. The other program is the human settlement program, and we're working closely now with the CAB memo that's been approved for the release of I think I signed under correction, but over 152 odd land parcels, and we're intensifying that process. There's been immense progress in that regard. And then for the agricultural program, once again, the dependency is with rural development. But through the IMC processes, et cetera, we're working with rural development to intensify the processing of all of the documentation that is required prior to us releasing land to relevant beneficiaries. Or we release directly to the department, and the Department of Rural Development then release to the relevant beneficiaries. So that is the program, and that also we will continue with Department of Rural Development to intensify that particular program. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Mim.
Okay, so we've taken a 10-minute slot on Rabada now. I'm going to just respond on the question raised by Honourable Graham Murray on the Public Works General Laws of Repeal and Amendment Act. And the question was, what is it about, and is it related to the Public Works Act? I think short first answer is no, it's not related to the Public Works Act. What this refers to, the Public Works General Laws Repeal and Amendment Act, it refers to one Public Works Bill that of whose intention will be to repeal or amend any old acts that are administered by the Department of Public Works from a technical point of view, or any other substantial amendments that might be required. And where this comes from, there was a Law Commission's report, as Gandhi had indicated, from 2012, which indicated for various departments which laws might need to be repealed. So the departments were just to look at those and see whether there are any technical difference amendments to be made or substantial amendments. What then this general law does, it's not like a new what it does, Chairperson, it's just highlighting the acts that where technical amendments have got to be done or substantive amendments that are administered by Public Works, and those are done in this general law of Public Works and Repeal Bill. The processes for this bill doesn't normally take, you know, the usual legislative route. I think it's mainly the discussions with the Justice Department, and then yes, Parliament is, this is sent to Parliament, but it doesn't follow the usual route as per any other bill, because here you are just amending. For instance, the Public Works has got a list of many acts that could be redundant. The ones that are before the Union, that's prior to 1910, the ones that were in the Republic from 1961 and 1994, there's still those old acts of 1902 and the old acts where they might not be relevant. And for instance, the expropriation bill, if you look at the one 444, the 1975, which we are now amending and repealing the old one after this one has been passed into law. Here there were my major amendments, hence we're taking it as a separate project, but others would just be technical changes. For instance, where minister of the name of the minister might change, or the definitions might change, and so forth. So we just have to stratify and see which ones need technical amendments, which ones require substantive amendments, and then we put them in this general Public Works General Laws of Repeal and Amendment Act and these technical differences I just highlighted there. And so that's basically that which we are doing in this project. And currently we are in consultation with the Department of Justice to take forward and discussing those technical differences that we are seeing are the ones that could be reflected in the General Laws Repeal and Amendment Act. So that's it, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members, and Mr. Minister, and colleagues. My name is Adam Tumbe. I just want to respond on the question raised by honourable members on the issues of IDT transfers, the issue of 21 million trenches. All I can confirm, honourable Chair, is that so far we're able to pay two trenches in line with Section 43 of the PFMA after appropriation. But before that, honourable members, before the appropriation was passed, we had to deal with the shortfalls, you know, on the operational cost of IDT, which was amounting to 80 million. So we're able to process that payment as a Chief Directorate IGR, making use of Section 29 of PFMA, because by that time when we paid during May and June, the appropriations bill was not yet passed. So as a progress to date, we're able to process payment of 72 million to IDT. And for the remainder of the financial year, we left with 46 million which is committed to IDT. So in short, the total budget which is allocated for IDT, which we need to process payment, is 128 million, which will deal with the operational cost of the entity. So that's our response, Chairperson. Thank you.
Chairperson, this is on 42.
Thank you, Mr. Masangu. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable DM. My name is Batu Mokhotu. I am going to respond to the two questions on mafias and SMMEs in construction. In terms of the construction mafias, the question that was raised was in relation to the shutdown of sites and what is Public Works then doing around that. First is to then acknowledge that there are indeed a number of delays due to unrest in communities due to a number of factors which then influence the progress and implementation of infrastructure projects. The concept of the SIFT methodology, in my understanding, will bring about a process of identification of projects and ensure project viability, particularly on these high-value projects. And projects will be able to be planned correctly, which will include consultation processes with communities. And communities will be able to engage on these projects while they are still in the planning stages. And then there's a process of that transparency that then takes place between the project owners and then the communities become the partners in such projects. Through the CIDB and Public Works, we also have a CAD memo, which is being processed to include some of the contributions from ESA, since ESA has been established. And we are looking at the social facilitation frameworks. We are looking at the activation of law enforcement. We are also looking at the awarenesses in communities and how we can also fully make use of the district model approach to service delivery. That is the what we are doing as far as the construction mafia is concerned, in the main, the CAB memo will then encompass all the elements that we are seeing as solutions. With regards to the construction SMEs and a reference to the lack of understanding of business, I think firstly it's to acknowledge that young people must be on the table in these discussions in order for us to have a sustainable industry in construction. Currently, we have a range of challenges with youth, women, people with disability. Employment and business opportunities seem to be a challenge in those categories because of the high barriers of entry that we seem to see. We can also learn as a department of the models that have been successful. We have the Vukupiri program, which is run from the EPWP, which was established in 2014. And through the statistics that we have, we can boldly able to program, establish other programs that are similar, where we have a learnership matched against the mentors. In this particular program, it is an ongoing program and it is promoting economic growth and it's creating sustainable development for contractors that are lower end between CRDB 1 to 3. And as a department, we are also looking at how do we then mimic from this program to have other similar programs for higher end grades of contractors, where issues of business will be learned, financial management will then be learned in these programs. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure whether your team has all responded, and then it's you now who is going to respond. But before you respond, there was a question raised by Honorable Kopane saying that with regard to Program 4, how has the transfer of the budget to IDT affected Program 4 responsibilities? She raised this and she has just sent a message saying that this question has not yet been answered. So I wanted to raise that with the team before you respond to the MP.
In fact, you are correct, Honorable Chair. Honorable Gopan is right. The other one is the Telkom Towers issue, which also has not been responded to, which I would want them to respond to.
Good morning, Chairperson. Chairperson?
Proceed.
Yes, it's Aaron. I'm responding to the impact of the IDT. If you go to slide number 27, it shows that the money that was moved to IDT, it was the projected spending from different programs. If you go to slide number 27, you will see around 18 million from program 1, 1.1 million from program 2, 18.7 million from program 3, and 30 million from program 5. So these were the projected underspending which were moved. So we did not utilize money from program 4. So it was the money that was projected and it was adjusted to this program. Some of the money was from PMTA, I think it was around 50 or 60 million. That was also utilized to support IGT. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Over to you now, DM.
telecom towers.
Thank you, Giam. It's the Batu Mohotu. I am going to respond to the telecom towers. The telecom towers, as far as I'm aware, I joined the department when most of the planning of the phases were then conceptualized. We are currently dealing with the phase one, but the complex itself has multiple phases. In the phase one, we are addressing Telkom Towers North Tower, and we're addressing Annex Building. These two buildings, for the purpose of improving the delivery, they were then allocated to DBSA as our partner in the implementation of these projects. The projects started off successfully in terms of the procurement and also the mobilizing of the site to then start. The duration of the project was for 9 months, and it was meant to have been completed, if my memory is correct, it was the 12th of May 2020. However, during the implementation of the project, we encountered two main challenges. The first challenge was the COVID aspect, which was right in the middle of the progress. As COVID started, we were around 60-something, about 65% complete, and it had an impact on the program of works. Secondly, we had the challenge of the unrest at that site due to the project steering committee who stopped the construction site because of disagreements on SMME employment in particular. We had a series of engagements on this particular project, and I can report that the project is now on track. We now have a program that the contractor has given us. The contractor is working. And then we are now dealing with the acceleration of the work so that the completion of that project can be realized sooner than January 2020. The scope of work that is still outstanding is at large to do with electrical work and mechanical installations. And we are trying to find ways of how do we then accelerate some of these components, which are a little bit complex to accelerate. So that is the report that we have on phase one of the project. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe let me then come in, Honorable Chair. I would want to be a bit to try and be as simple as I possibly can in the question. I'm worried because Honorable Graham Mara is saying she has been asking this question. I will try now to be as simplistic as possible so that we find each other on the question or with respect to the structure of the department, the link between ESA and Department of Public Works. Let me remind honorable members that Public Works as a department has been a standalone Department of Public Works throughout its inception. And in this term, it was promulgated as Department of Public Works and Infrastructure.
In the previous terms, infrastructure was all over. Each department had a unit infrastructure here and there, especially the delivery department. And in the last term, that is the last, in the fifth term, infrastructure was in the presidency, in the Department of Economic Development as part of the PICC establishment. And because now the department has been promulgated as the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, there had to be migration of the components of infrastructure, especially so far as the PICC work, of which ISA is but one part. So that migration has led to the department having two arms, the Department of Public Works as it existed, and the infrastructure arm as it has migrated or has been migrated from the Department of Economic Development. So now we have the Department of Public Works as it stood, and we have this arm of infrastructure. But because they are under one ministry and one leadership and are interconnected, the infrastructure arm is coordinating infrastructure of the various government departments, including SOEs, including local government, including provincial government, so that we know what infrastructure is built where on behalf of government, which is a public infrastructure, and what infrastructure is approved where, that is going to support economic development, which one is going to support social development. And that work is done by ISA. That is, it's more of a coordinating and advisory role in terms of planning. When I'm saying advisory, it advises, it coordinates the planning, the packaging, the financing, how it various projects could be financed, looking at various sources of funding. The Department of of Public Works has been and is still continuing with its business of assisting the various departments with their infrastructure needs. And as such, when I was saying earlier in the meeting, those projects that seem to be stalled, we are going to request this right arm of the department to help us find solutions that will help us quickly recover from the stalling that has taken place, not only this out of COVID, but even in previous financial years. Those projects that are of importance to the various departments, but which are have been stalled either by the mafias or by the unrest, just community unrest, others the capacity of the contractors. There are various reasons why these projects stall. And therefore, we would want them to help us analyze that and help us say, how do we quickly find a solution to speed up those. I hope in this, I've tried to answer various questions into one, but also try and reflect on the relations between the various units in the of the department. My last one, Chair, is that yes, we most projects have stalled. Even now, the impact of COVID, as it is still with us, we will find that projects may not necessarily get to speed in the manner we would want them to. But ours is to always work to find a solution, anticipate challenges, and find solutions to those challenges. Working, of course, with our various entities. In as much as we are not discussing the entities per se in depth, but we have analyzed the challenges at IDT. We are now consulting with the cabinet. Remember that IDT is an entity that was initially created as a trust by cabinet. And in as much as it changed its status over the years, but that was not necessarily translated into proper policy, and hence it has continued to operate as both an entity and a trust, which at times, in terms of decision-making, makes it difficult for the department to intervene in a decisive way. Now, we are consulting with cabinet insofar as its status currently and the challenge that the two forms in which it presents itself, the challenge that that brings to the department in terms of providing meaningful interventions in the state of affairs. Let us remember that the current challenges that are bedeviling IDT are not challenges of 2019. They come as far back as 2008. So if we understand that, the honorable members would also understand that we're trying to solve a long existing problem, which has been continuing unabated. And we're trying to say, to look at options in terms of how best can it be, how best can those challenges be managed and resolved. And hence we're going to cabinet now to say, this is how, what we have found in IDT, and this is what we think we could do about it. And cabinet will engage in that discussion and will give us a direction. So I do want us to just understand the processes. But we couldn't just sit back and say, yes, IDT has challenges, full stop. We needed to say, what are the challenges? What has brought about the challenges? What is the extent of the challenges? How, what then, and how do we then respond to the challenges? I thought I needed to do that little bit of explanation. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you, TM, and your team. I don't know whether the honorable members have, they still want a second bite in terms of the questions, and if not, because I don't see any hands here, I think we should release you, TM, and your team, so that we will deal with the questions. But before I release you, let's appreciate again the presentation that you have made
to us, but just few comments on the presentation. Some of the questions that are being asked by the honourable members, for example, this issue of IGT vis-a-vis the program 4, vis-a-vis the information that you took some money from other programs, the money that you could see that you would understand. Remember, as part of us, we also look at the reports that you submit to Treasury. The reason that question was raised is because the information that you sent to Treasury, you indicated that you had taken that amount from Program 4. But okay, we're not there. But I just want you to know that some of the information that is coming up is that we also read the info that you submit to Treasury, that is the report that Treasury is taking to the Standing Committee of Appropriations. We read that information so that when we come to this meeting, we are prepared, DM and your team. But other than that, we appreciate that. And remember, when we asked you, we wanted to check at the compensation of goods and the compensation of Ilanjo employees. When we asked you to check, because we saw that there is going to be a challenge. We have seen that there is an improvement on the rollout, because you are now using Archibus. Yeah, you said you are going to use Archibus. We can see the work that is being done and the improvements that are being made in you rolling out that. But one thing that I want to hammer on, DM and the team, this issue of the department being a Hollywood site, acting, especially in the senior management, that one is really not going to assist the department to move forward. We appreciate the fact that there are interviews that were conducted yesterday. We hope that at least by January, some of the positions will be filled. Otherwise, when there is no permanent employee, someone is acting, especially at the senior management, the department will lose focus, because sometimes the person that is not there won't be focused, will be applying somewhere. But if the person is employed for that, that person will try to perform optimally to ensure that the department is performing so well. In all the departments, we raised this. In fact, I did raise it in the meeting 2 weeks back. You have so many acting DGs, almost in all, other than the fact that you also have an acting DG. Even in the branches, you have acting DGs in all the branches. I think that one should be sorted out. We appreciate that.
For all women who will be employed.
that one is a national question, if we can put it that way. Employment equity has to be addressed. We're looking at that will be employed. We will see a different picture from what we saw when we came in, that is being a men's choir. We don't know, okay, we are not part of your employment processes, but we would like to see women being DDGs of this department. Thank you again, DM, and also extend it to the minister, the team, acting DG, and all the acting DDGs and the teams that are here with us. You may now be released from the meeting so that we continue with our work. Honorable Trink also asked to be released at 11, is attending another meeting. Honorable Sewis, I had to leave the meeting because she is really not well. Our two members, Honorable Suisa and Honorable Falskalvik, they're not well. We wish them all the best and a speedy recovery to them. Ms. Martinez, can we then go to the second item? Thank you, Pelegazi.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Ms. Martinez?
Oh, sorry, Chairperson, I was on mute. I didn't realize. Thanks, Chair. The minutes set up before the committee for consideration today are the minutes of the meeting that was held yesterday, which was the 24th of November, where the department gave us a briefing on the expropriation bill. And as usual, Chair, I would like to request the members to just check if the attendance is captured correctly.
On my side, Nola, it's screen
asik. Hey, but we can see the screen, the minutes. Honorable Jobo, is it?
No, but I can see the no, let's go back. What's on my screen? Yeah, sounds right.
Chair, I see Honorable Kopane has raised their hand.
Okay, Honorable Kopane.
I'm sorry, Chair. No, I didn't raise my hand with a mistake.
You raised it earlier on. Honorable members, are these minutes the true reflection of what happened in yesterday's meeting? Yes, are they the true reflection, honorable members?
Yes, Chairperson, I can confirm it's a true reflection, and therefore I propose an adoption of the minute.
Thank you, Honorable Njobo. Any second, Honorable Members?
Chair, I'm having a second.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Graham Marie, for seconding that motion. Any other issue on Ms. Martinez?
No other issues, Chairperson. Thank you very much. We'll
no announcement, nothing?
No, Chair. We've already made the announcement for next week's meeting yesterday. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members. Let's again appreciate the your contribution in the meeting. The always robust, straight to the point, and your support, especially through Abe and Ines in our discussions, is always on point. We really appreciate that. And yesterday, honorable members were debating in Parliament. Those declarations, they were good, honorable members, all of them, from the different political parties. It showed how we discussed in this meeting. We really always appreciate that. The meeting is adjourned. Our two honorable members, may they get well and up soon.
Thank you so much, Chair. Have a good afternoon. See you all in the House later.